Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 367 of the Roguecast, recorded April 5th, 2022, Built for the Yeti. Welcome back to the bi-weekly Roguecast.
Yeah, we're trying to make it weekly.
They stop...
They haven't been delivering our comics.
Yeah, comics came late last week.
They barely made it in time today.
Also, we got our new cards rack, which meant we had to do a big store reorganization. So if you haven't been in the store a bit, you can come in and see we moved a bunch of stuff around.
Yeah, and not just moved it around to confuse you, but I think moved it around in some pretty cool ways. You're going to see some nicer, neater displays and all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah. The big display is the GameGenics, so we have our card sleeves and all that kind of stuff in a fancy new rack.
Yep. But several things got jostled by that. Comic stuff, it was all mainly the game stuff. Comic stuff hadn't moved much, has it?
Not a lot, no.
Yeah.
No. But, and then we didn't get our comics. We had Marvel and DC last week, but didn't get our comics until Friday.
Yep.
This week we got our regular comics and our DC comics, and then our Marvel came late.
Yeah.
But we still managed to get everything. We didn't get a chance to read everything, but we got a pretty good look at the week.
We snuck a read as quick as we could to bring it to you, the people.
Yes. Store news, there's a bunch of that too. So the Magic the Gathering Streets of New Capenna pre-release is in a couple of weeks. That's April 22nd.
That one fascinates me because it's like supernatural mobs duking it out.
There's five like demon families and it's like a little bit of prohibition.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
It's like that Cullen Bunn story.
It's a very fun setting,
yeah. So we're taking signups for the pre-release, right?
Yep. Free Comic Book Day is coming on us. We are now about a month out as we record this.
Goodness gracious.
So we're starting to see the Free Comic Book Day books come in.
Oh, yeah. That's why my back is sore right now.
Yeah. So that's May 7th. We are, unless COVID does something weird, which could always happen, we're planning to do a traditional new comic book Free Comic Book Day.
Yep. Yeah.
So we'll have the line. We'll have the you come and get stuff.
Yep.
We've got a bunch of stuff from last year. We may do like 10 per person or something.
Yeah.
If you listen to the podcast, you can definitely say, hey, you say you guys are doing 10 per person, and we'll give you 10 comics.
Yeah. That's a nice little bonus for
you. Yeah. Also,
we'll see you there, Russell.
Also, we're on TikTok now.
Yeah.
You can find us. Shireen is mostly curating that.
Yeah. I think we're all going to try and like get a little knowledgeable about it, but for right now we're letting the young handle it.
Yes. you can find us on TikTok at Rogues Gallery. At Rogues Gallery TX. I think it probably is that.
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. You'll find us. You can see me putting up a game display to the Flight of the Bumblebee song.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Among other things that we've done. We got in some new stuff. We're starting to get the stuff from Gamma that I order coming in, so. We have plush owlbears of the regular and snowy variety.
Yep.
Those are $15. They're pretty cheap.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, like plush toys are usually kind of on the pricier side, and these are both very soft and cuddly and yet reasonably priced. There's also some little plush meeples.
We're almost out of them.
Yep. Had we mentioned previously the blind box or like dice?
Yeah,
dice
we talked about that last week.
Yep.
But they also, so those owlbears come from Norse Foundry, which is also a dice company, and we got a couple of their sort of big fancy dice, and people seem to like those.
Yeah, we have some glowstone ones and that actually glow in the dark. There's also
ceramic ones.
Yeah. And I feel like there was another one.
There's a wooden one.
Yeah, there's a wooden
really
one. Really
cool.
Yeah. So yeah, if you want some super fancified dice, we have some options there. We got a big restock on Animal Adventures, which is you're playing dogs, who are also like paladins and fighters and wizards.
Right. D&D with puppers.
Yep.
Dungeons and Doggos.
We got the...
There's also kitties.
Right, but it's
mostly doggos. There is one set of kitties.
Yeah.
But it's... So we've got the starter box. We've got the miniatures, which have like four different minis or six different minis in each one. We got the new hardcover, which is like the adventure and expansion of the world, and a miniature set that goes with that. So we've got a pretty full line of that. We got in Skull Canyon Ski Fest, which is Panosaurus' newest game that I played a little bit. It combines sort of the Ticket to Ride mechanic of like matching cards, but there's also when you get to the bottom of the slope, every three rounds, at the end of every round, you get to the bottom of the slope, and there's kind of a Takedo-style mini game where you're like going around and gathering things, and there's gear and that kind of thing. Super fun.
But it is a game about skiing slopes, right?
Skiing slopes.
Interesting.
Yep.
Is it just regular skiers, or is it like they're space skiers, they're elf skiers,
they're regular skiers,
goblins, whatever.
But there could be extreme snowboarding, too.
That's pretty cool.
There's also a Yeti.
Ooh. All right. Now, why'd you hold out that on me?
Because you never start with Yeti, Dave.
Oh, okay.
You always end with Yeti.
Build to the Yeti.
Yeah, build to the Yeti. And then we got the G.I. Joe RPG from Renegade.
Yep.
Which we're all pretty excited about.
Yeah, we're not going to maybe put that through its paces.
You might know that we're kind of G.I. Joe fans here.
You know.
Whatever.
But it looks cool. Like, it seems like all the G.I. Joes that you know are like trainers. And then you will make your own Joe who is like trained by these various G.I. Joes.
Right on.
And it comes with it has an adventure in it. So you basically pick it up, play it, and then if you want, continue on to the Emerald Oubliette, which is the adventure that's coming up.
Oh, interesting.
We got Goblin Fireworks Fight. That's a game in which your goblins fighting with fireworks.
Running around chasing each other with bottle rockets, I guess.
It's the Pathfinder goblins. So.
Oh, it's literally those?
It's Pathfinder goblins, yeah. We got the King of Tokyo Monster Box, which is King of Tokyo, its main two expansions, a baby Gigasaur, which is baby Godzilla, and some other stuff, and it's all in a big box. So if you have not played King of Tokyo, or if you are looking for a gift for people, that's a good new addition. We got Sentinels of Earth Prime, which is the Sentinels of the Multiverse card game, which was a pretty popular CCG deck builder.
Yeah.
But using the world and art from the Mutants and Masterminds setting.
Interesting.
So it's compatible with the Sentinels of the Multiverse.
What I remember, we just played a little bit of Mutants and Masterminds, but I remember it had, I think, a pretty good setting.
It does, and it's got really nice art.
In fact, weirdly enough, I believe that is a somewhat unusual thing, is that many of the Super Games champions, what was the one you just mentioned? Mutants and Masterminds?
Yeah.
I think many of them have pretty good settings.
They do, yeah. So that's kind of cool. We got expansions for Isle of Cats, as well as a standalone Explore and Draw, one of the roll and writes for them. We got a new edition of Caverna Cave vs. Cave, which is the two-player, I think it's a Reiner Knizia game.
I think maybe. It's Uwe Rosenberg.
Oh, Rosenberg, you're right.
Is he the one who did...
Agricola.
Agricola, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
But they got a big box that's got the expansions. Despite being a big box, it's relatively cheap, because it is just a two-player game.
Yeah.
We got new X-Wing. We got the Gauntlet Fighter, which is the first ship that can be used in any faction.
Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly where it's come. I don't recognize it.
It came out of the Mandalorian, like Clone Wars era.
Mando.
Oh, it's like the Mandalorian ship or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big giant ship.
Yeah, it's a cool, very cool looking ship. But we also got the Razor Crest.
Also got the Razor Crest, which is the Mandalorian ship, and it looks really cool.
Was the Mandalorian ship?
I was gonna say it was.
Spoiler warning.
Oh, now it's got a cool Naboo fighter.
That's true. Yeah. And then we got a stock from Free League Games, the guys who do the One Ring RPG, the Alien RPG.
Yeah, it's the second edition of the One Ring, aka the Lord of the Rings role-playing game, is out. Somebody we were talking about it in the story yesterday. It is actually rather different from D&D, for instance. It is meant to have like kind of the traveling aspect and sort of a little bit of a survivalist element of Lord of the Rings, tracking sort of like your state of mind a little bit, like, so you know if you're like falling into the under the influence of Sauron and things like that, and that's something that like hobbits are particularly good at resisting, so like they stand, that is one of the things that they stand out against. But there's a lot of stuff to make it feel more uniquely Lord of the Rings, and it's not just D&D with hobbits.
Yeah,
get your ring on before the show starts in September.
Yep,
right.
They have a new box set, the classic Twilight 2000, now alternate history of Russia invading the U.S.
Yeah, basically Red Dawn, the RPG.
Yep. And then Tales from the Loop, which is also an Amazon Prime show, but is a like sort of Swedish sci-fi thing.
Yeah, an alternate history 1980s thing that has like elements of like, I guess, like almost that Stranger Thing, kids on
weird
bikes thing.
Technologies.
Things. Yeah, with some weird sci-fi stuff going on.
We also got their original sci-fi games, Mutant Year Zero, which has a... we got the Genesis Lab, something like that, where basically you're playing mutant animals. So if you miss After the Bomb and that TMNT,
it
gives that vibe. And also Coriolis, which is supposed to be a really good sort of sci-fi space opera. And finally, Morkborg, which is...
That's like the death metal RPG,
death metal,
right?
Fantasy RPG, sort of old school, with those sort of Norwegian death metal vibes.
Right.
Cool little, this bright yellow hardcover rule.
Yeah, I feel like for the aesthetics alone, some people might want to pick that one up. And these games, these are, what's the company?
Free League.
Free League, all of these games are currently displayed essentially right at the front desk. They're like right in front, so you'll see them when you're ringing up or right when you walk in the store, basically.
All right, let's talk news. Let's talk about Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which got a trailer and a bunch of mini trailers I didn't watch. Introducing the characters.
It feels like a pretty good time for Star Trek right now because what do you call it? Picard is doing well.
Yep.
Today is, by the way, is First Contact Day, a.k.a. the day that ever since the movie Star Trek
First Contact
came out, that that Vulcans became the first alien species that humans met and catapulted us into the future, essentially. I mean,
That's pretty good for a movie. You got a day named after you. Like, there's not gonna be a Morbius Day 10 years from now.
Give it a chance, Randy. Give Morbius a chance. They also just announced I'm sure there's gonna be more Star Trek announcements today. That this is pretty cool. The entire Next Generation cast will reunite for Picard season 3.
That's really cool.
So that's gonna be awesome. Basically, the Enterprise crew will be back, and it's Worf, it's everybody, Dr. Crusher, Data.
What about Wesley?
His name wasn't listed in the initial loadout.
I'll be sad for him.
He does the after show. Yeah. I bet he's going to guest star in it.
Yeah.
You know, on the show, at one point he went off with a godlike alien, and that was basically the last you saw of him.
I was going to say, that was the last we saw of him.
Yeah.
There was something a little weird about a godlike alien coming and adopting a barely teenage boy and taking him off in his space van.
You're saying that that's the equivalent of a van that showed up?
Yeah, it was a little weird.
Will Wheaton has turned out to be a pretty cool dude who's embraced the geek culture on his own. He's been a big proponent of board games and gaming in general. And he did a show. And he's a cool dude. And he does the after show for Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard. I learned that he's on good terms with these guys.
Yep.
I think he's going to probably show.
I would hope so.
Unless he since there are godlike aliens, the Q continuum play a role in the current season of Picard. And since he hangs out with godlike aliens too, or has, he could show up in the current season. Who knows?
True.
No matter what, I'm sure they'll keep. They probably decide to keep wraps on it. But
anyway,
Strange New Worlds is their upcoming show that spun off of the appearance of Captain Pike in Discovery a few seasons ago.
Yep.
He was the captain before Kirk had the Enterprise, and people liked his guest appearance so much on Star Trek Discovery that there was enough fan outcry that within 2 years there's a show.
Well, him and whoever they got to play Spock and their Rebecca Romijn playing number one.
Right. She who in fandom was called her in some of the books they called her Una, and that ended up translating over. So that is her name.
Yeah.
Kind of weird, but number one, aka Una.
And then they've got is Dr. Omega original character or is
he was. Okay. He was just in I think two episodes, but it was basically in the episodes that had Pike in him in the original show.
And they've got an Andorian on the crew, who I think that's a new character.
So he's a a subspecies of Andorian that's got the pale skin, and I think he in particular is actually blind. In fact, I know he is. I liked him, especially from the little micro trailer they did for him, which you haven't watched, think, Randy.
I tried not to watch the micro trailers.
He has attitude, it seems like. He definitely has a superiority complex, it seems like, and sort of engages with it in a kind of a fun way.
And then I see there's another maybe a crewman, a pilot.
So I don't know all of them that well. There's a new security officer. Yeah.
Uhura is in there.
Uhura's in it. Yeah.
Yep.
Uhura and Spock. I was thinking at some point, this is as the seasons go, they'll probably pick up Chekhov and Sulu.
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody was on the ship before Kirk signed on as captain, but it would make sense. He didn't build up his D&D character on the ship. He was on even in the
sword fighting and somewhere in there. So I'm Sulu's got to be there somewhere.
But not initially. I don't think he'll be in this first season.
Yeah.
I think other people get to use swords too.
But also this just the trailer looks they're doing the good inspiring speech thing, which I think they do well on the new Star Trek stuff. Enterprise looks fantastic.
Yep, there's lots of glimpses of the actual Strange New Worlds of the title.
Yep.
It's a very kind of high energy trailer with Pike kind of having that sort of 60s pilot bravado.
Yeah.
That I think was what people liked about him.
Yeah, the bit where he does the aside to number one, he's I love this job.
Yeah, it's kind of what you want from Star Trek. It's sometimes, every once in a while Star Trek starts to lean a little dreary.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell some good stories there. I've been going through Deep Space Nine for the first time, and its darker edge stories are, I honestly think, some of the best Trek. But it kind of has to be a little bit of a counterpoint to things.
Well, I think the thing is, I think Kirk has become sort of a cliche. He's become, not a cliche, but people have rounded him up to the swagger, fighting, boozing, sexing.
Right.
Like, kind of the one they did in the movie.
But, right.
Like, you go back, and he was a little more of a roguish type.
Like, right. He was like an explorer guy who, but, like, with some attitude and, like, yeah, like an ability to really think on his feet.
And I feel like their Pike is closer to that version of Kirk, too.
Yeah, totally. I totally. Like
that. What is that actor's name? I can't.
Anson Mount.
Anson Mount.
That guy's, he played Black Bolt, and that poor guy saddled with
that
role.
He was also on that AMC show, Hell on Wheels.
He was great on Hell on Wheels.
Yeah, he was. But his energy here really kind of sells
this. This is the best role he's had.
Yeah, I mean,
his he was probably really good on Hell on Wheels.
He was fine, but it was a dour show.
But his version of, like, all AMC shows were dour.
Yeah.
But his energy as Pike is sort of
infectious.
Infectious.
And
yes.
Also, you can tell, like I said, with Hell on Wheels was kind of dour. Inhumans was kind of dour. I mean, he was basically been playing these sort of, like, dour characters.
Yeah.
To see him, like, get to cut loose and be a little charming.
Yeah.
I think he obviously loves it. He's talked about how much he loves Star Trek. And
speaking of being charming, there's sex in this trailer.
That's true.
So we haven't mentioned Spock. You see him with his betrothed, T'Pring, I think is her name. She's the one who was, like, famously in the episode where you find out about the Pom-Farr thing. They go back and Kirk ends up getting pulled into Vulcan politics and having to battle Spock and all that stuff. Like, there is a glimpse of that kind of battle thing going on. And I don't know quite how the timing works. You know, if it's like a memory, if it's him practicing with Vulcan weapons. But you do see him with T'Pring. I think that's the woman he kisses in the trailer.
Yeah.
And Pike is in bed with somebody, so they're bringing a little bit of that 60s sexiness back.
Yep.
And Trek's actually always had like that going on. Even Next Generation, even though it kind of seems a little bit stuffier than the rest, was kind of free lovey.
It's true.
Everybody on that ship at some point or another was getting some on or trying desperately
to. Everybody was banging Data.
Sorry, Geordi. I know you had the roughest time of them all.
Geordi had holographic girlfriends.
You know, LeVar.
Riker was.
He took them all. There was nobody left for Geordi after Riker came through. But, like, poor LeVar Burton, I think he kind of felt like it was almost like a racist thing. Yeah, and, like, he might be right.
He had that hologram character.
Exactly. He was kind of emasculated by, like. But you know what? Geordi was a big nerd.
It's true.
And you know what? I'm sure that there were some people identifying with him. Lord knows I was.
HBO Max, I think, like, a lot of stuff we're talking about this week is, like, looking back. We may be in nostalgia times.
Yeah. They love the franchises that they can bank on.
Well, HBO Max is doing an It prequel series where they're going to reveal the origins of Pennywise.
Yep.
Bill Skarsgård going to play him?
I don't know.
Skarsgård is Alexander. Which Skarsgård plays?
No, it's Bill Skarsgård.
Okay.
I think that was Elvis Skarsgård.
Oh, okay.
He's playing Elvis,
I'm not
right?
dying to see Pennywise's origin, but at the same time, I'm not against It prequel.
So here's the thing. Like, there is, like, depending on how they do it, I suspect they're going to stake out some of their own territory. But there's actually a ton of material that's, like in the book, that wasn't really covered in the movie.
Yeah.
Or revealed in another Stephen King book.
Yeah.
Well, and also, you know, we look at Dr. Sleep, which is a sequel of sorts to
Shining.
There's definitely room to explore Stephen King, and Dr. Sleep is nothing like The Shining.
Right.
It's its own. It's a different genre.
Yeah.
So you could do an It series that's not about, like, kids on bikes, but it is actually more of the mystery of the alien kind of thing.
Well, in the book, there's a lot of flashes back to, because I think Pennywise appears every 27, 28 years.
Yeah, 27.
Which I always kind of guessed it was supposed to be, you know, that was like the age that all, like, the sort of famous rockers would die at, like, or like James Dean and Janis Joplin and Kurt Cobain, they all, like, died at age 27.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was written before Cobain happened, but that number was already kind of a magical, weird number.
Wait, are you saying Stephen King killed Kurt Cobain?
I'm implying it heavily. No, but I think that's what he was leaning into. And so in the book, they look through Derry's history, and that you get flashbacks and other people's accounts of events that happened, like the father of... Who's the...
Bev?
No, the black kid. I can't say his name suddenly.
Oh, yeah, the fire in the...
Yeah, the fire at the the club, and there was, like, a club for black soldiers in World War II, which has a cool guest appearance by the dude from The Shining, the guy Dick Halloran or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Who's because of that Stephen King shared universe. And, like... So there is even some room for that kind of stuff if they want to.
Okay.
But this, like, it goes back, like, hundreds of years, I think, to, like, the early days of Derry. And if you go to the their peyote dream sequence thing, to, like, you know, prehistoric times.
Right.
Like, there was, like, some sort of, like,
'cause, I mean, like,
alien meteor type thing with
Pennywise
with his presence.
Was supposed to, like, hit, like, the meteor was supposed to hit, like, eons ago or something.
And for all I know, they may have even, like, done the, like, that is what has killed the dinosaurs. I don't know.
So, it says it's in development. The director who directed the two movies is attached, along with the people who did the script.
I kind of want it to be its own team and not the movie team, because I didn't love those reinterpretations.
It's going to be in line with the movie.
Well,
but it also
that's
says
a little too bad.
It's currently called Welcome to Derry and would begin in the 1960s.
Okay.
I like the
movie.
So
it may not be
enough,
as
so.
Basically, Dave, it may not be as ambitious as it sounds like the one you just described.
Yeah, yeah, I would prefer it to be a little bit more ambitious, but you know, it's hard to develop characters if you're jumping around in times. So we'll see. And also, they could start in the 60s and still bounce around if they want to do, you know, say, oh, yeah, my grandfather said that back in 1877, blah, blah, blah happened. And then they do an episode there. I don't know. How should I know?
They have a caveman episode. You know, really?
It's also, I mean, it's in development, so we don't know if it's going to happen.
If they do a caveman episode, then I have to watch the show.
Ron Howard and Brian Grazer are teaming doing documentary on the Jim Henson Company.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have any interest in this, but I know some people will.
My Muppet interest became tapped out some years ago.
Yeah.
I wish them no malice, but I'm just not into puppety things as much as I once was.
Well, that's about where I am.
I think I'd like to know a little bit more about Jim Henson as a person, though. So I think it'd be kind of interesting to delve into that.
Well, you know, and I had always heard, you know, our former staffer, Amanda, is a big Muppet fan.
Yep.
And, what I kind of found out from her and some other places was that there was this kind of darker side to him, because I think they did, what was it? There was a Naughty Puppet movie a few years ago, one of those Meet the Feebles type movies.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, like, by his son, I think, and some people were like, it wasn't a Muppet movie formally, but it was like
how dare
you taint the legacy, and it was like, I remember Amanda saying that's like, Jim Henson, like, wanted to do some more messed up stuff, apparently.
See, but I think that would be kind of interesting to learn and sort of, or even just learn, like, his original ideas for the Muppets.
Yeah.
And sort of the
it
birth
almost,
of that.
It's
kind
such
of stuff.
A, like, a little, become a slice of American pop culture. And there's always been this interesting thing where, like, everybody kind of plays along. I remember a bit, I think y'all might have heard me mention this before. It was some sort of big news event had happened, like maybe like the Challenger explosion or something like that, and a lot of kids were pretty shocked by this.
Yeah.
You know, that like a lot of school kids, including my own classes, were either watching live or watched it, you know, like shortly thereafter.
Right.
And I think they were like on Nightline, one of the news shows of the era, they had like some Muppets come on to like talk kids through it. But, like, you know, here you have these famous news hosts, and he's like talking to Kermit the Frog.
It's like Walter Cronkite.
David, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds to me like you're saying that Jim Henson caused the Challenger disaster.
I don't know if it was Henson or Kermit himself.
Right, yeah.
But one of the Muppets was...
I thought it was Grimlock.
Actually, I think it was Kermit's Russian duplicate. I think he was the guy who sabotaged it.
Was it the one who was in the Muppets Take Manhattan and had an evil mustache?
Yes, that one.
that evil
one.
Kermit?
Evil Kermit.
Anyway,
did you say this was a show, or was this a
it's
movie?
A documentary. I don't know if it's a show or what. Yeah.
But like, I feel like there's easily a story to tell there. It's just a matter of, like, is it for you or not?
Right.
I suspect it could be done pretty well.
Netflix announced they're not doing a second season of Archive 81, which is a bummer. I'm in the, like, tail end of season 2 of Archive 81 on the podcast, which I'm really enjoying. And I listened to season 3 already by accident, which is its whole other story. So like, I didn't miss anything. Although I'm seeing now as I listen to season 2, I'm like, oh, there's characters who come into season 3 that I didn't realize there was a backstory there. But anyway, and then I went back and listened to season 1. So I've now gone through all the podcasts, and I'm like, man, they left off in a cliffhanger.
They did, completely.
Like, Netflix, they're big jerks. They at least were used to be like, you get 3 seasons of a show before they leave you hanging with a cliffhanger, it's like they did with
Santa Clarita Diet.
No, but they had to save that money so they could make a Spy Kids reboot.
Thanks, Netflix.
They had to raise our prices so we can get a Spy Kids reboot. Here's the thing. I'm not against the Spy Kids reboot.
No.
I don't know.
I thought the Spy Kids movies were fun.
A TV show, and I think hopefully a show that's more focused will be less goofy than the Spy Kids sequels got.
Yeah.
Because they got goofy.
Well, they did the whole Alan Cumming weird kind of.
He got real into CGI. Thing. I don't know if you ever saw the third one where it was Sylvester Stallone as like the evil toy master in virtual world and Ricardo Montalban in a battle suit. it got weird. It got weirder than the second one.
Ricardo Montalban in a battle suit sounds kind of fun.
That was the thing that actually happened?
Yes.
Ricardo Montalban was alive for the Spy Kid movies?
Spy Kid 3. He's the grandpa.
God, I thought he died before even the first one.
Nope. He was the grandpa.
So let me see if I get what you're saying right. Robert Rodriguez killed Ricardo Montalban?
That's correct.
With Spy Kids?
Yeah, I'm not saying it. I'm just implying.
Is Rodriguez involved?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
This is at Netflix?
Yeah.
Not at Disney?
No.
It's weird.
Well, it's not a Disney property.
I know, but he's such an in with Disney right now with all Star Wars and Mandalorian stuff.
I don't know.
I feel like that would have been a better home for it.
Weird. We are hitting weird 90s retro, starting to see the 90s nostalgia too, because the other thing is Bill Skarsgård, who apparently maybe will not be in it, we don't know, but he is maybe going to star as Eric Draven in a Crow reboot. I don't know that I ever need to see The Crow again. I know people like The Crow. I find the whole premise a little bit rapey.
Yeah.
Well, with the whole, rape being in it.
Yeah, and it's also one of the trope of, like, I gotta get revenge for them killing my woman.
Yeah.
So there's, like, some... And, like, I've seen good versions of that story. It used to be in every Clint Eastwood movie and, tons of 60s, 70s, and 80s action movies. Yeah. And I know that there's ones in there that I have enjoyed, but I'm like, man, it's played out and it's tied into a lot of toxic shit.
Yep.
So, maybe not super wild about that.
Yeah,
part.
If we're going to do a retro, I would rather than Spy Kids as a reboot, I want a Desperado series on TV.
Yeah, that was weirdly the notion of that there were these other mariachis, not just the one out there that had tricked out stuff, and they could occasionally call on each other for backup.
I'm going to throw out a title.
It's weird that it didn't get more development.
Yeah. El Mariachis.
I think you're right. I think that's the obvious title. Like, that, if they were doing that, I'd be more excited. And also, instead of The Crow, I say do The Max. Give you a live action The Max. The technology's there. You can do some cool stuff with it.
It's got to be one or the other.
One or the other.
Or The Max.
Yep.
Max it is.
Yep. See?
They need a homeless superhero.
Yes.
Actually, The Max would be a good thing for development because it is unlike anything else.
Didn't they do a cartoon of The Max?
They did do a cartoon, but it was one of these animated comic kind of
things. It was a weird thing.
Right. It was on MTV's Liquid Television.
Yeah, it was.
Back when.
The other thing is, honestly, The Max, as much as I enjoyed it, was so weird and didn't have like a strong
story. It's hard
story.
To quite remember all the things that even happened in it.
Yeah. I feel like you take it and take with the stuff that was cool about it and build a stronger story. You put a good showrunner on it, you could do a really cool story.
Yeah.
Just gonna say, let's divert and get a Shadowhawk story.
No, Lord, no. Speaking of revenge. The Max had, I'm going to say there were feminist themes running through it. He was, in fact, ultimately revealed to be like a homeless guy who was either deranged or the hero of an alternate dimension outback.
Yep.
There was the amazing visual world of the outback with its giant, like, floating air whales and the little, izzes?
Yeah,
is that what the little death deadly creatures were that looked cute but were scary?
I'm just saying. And I think
Mr. Gone, like, this could be a badass movie.
I feel like Sam Keith was doing a lot of acid.
Oh man, like, I feel like Grant Morrison was occasionally like, "Could you leave me some?
Don't open my doorway." That's mine.
Anyway, they should do The Max and not The Crow.
I agree. Down with Crow.
The Crow had like 5 movies.
Yeah,
didn't that? There were a lot of VODs.
Oh, yeah,
but, all right. But there were several of them.
I think that's true.
The Crow's had his time.
Yeah, you had your chance, Crow. But that is, unfortunately, the era we live in where everything old is new again.
Did James O'Barr ever do anything other than The Crow, or is that all he's done?
I don't think he did. I think he tried something else, but I think The Crow was his thing. All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the last 2 weeks. We are talking comics for the week of March 30th and April 6th, and we're going to start off with the one that came late, and we were super excited about this, and we're probably going to be, if we haven't already told you about it, we're going to be talking to you about it, and that is Astro City's Return, with That Was Then, which is a one-shot.
Focusing on sort of a
teen sidekick heroes.
Teen sidekick heroes.
Yeah. They're on like a road trip in 1969.
Mm-hmm. They're wanting to take a break from superheroing, which they can't really take a break because...
Well, yeah, one of the kind of fun things about Astro City is, of course, it's like it amalgamates ideas from Marvel sort of tropes, DC tropes, but also kind of throws in a little bit, usually kind of a little bit more realism or like some deeper ideas in there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, like, I can tell almost that, like, this would have been, like, a miniseries or something like that, because they're having all these adventures while they're road tripping, and they mention it. Yep. It's basically, like, every town they go through that gets menaced by some supervillain, including, amazingly, they mentioned when they went through Texas fighting something called, an acronym called Cactus with a K, and it was an acronym. They don't say what it is, and I need to message Kurt Busiek on Facebook and know.
Because he'll know.
Because he'll know. He knows. Yeah, but he may be like, you'll have to keep reading.
Yep.
They're all on the cusp of adulthood, and they're trying to, as befits a story set in the 60s, which, because that was such a tumultuous time to be like a young person, I think, especially, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with their lives. Are they going to, like, hang under their names? Are they going to change names and become their own superheroes? Are they going to stop superheroing?
But also, there was a big thing, like, a bunch of them, there was a thing where a bunch of them died.
Yeah. Right. Essentially, they got together after, like, a wake for a superhero, yeah, or for a superhero team. Yeah, the Jayhawks?
The Jayhawks.
Yep. Yeah. And so you get a lot of sort of, you'll see if this happens to be your first Astro City, a lot of how Kurt Busiek builds out these kind of histories that makes it feel like a very lived-in superhero universe, where there's, like, any given, you could pick a year, and, like, there's all kinds of interesting things that happened in that year. One of the main characters is Nick's flipping through it, and, like, the racer guy who looks like kind of like Speed Racer in it. There's lots of cool designs.
His name is Rally.
Rally, yeah.
I like Rivets, the robot kid.
There's also
I love that they buy a car at auction that was like
a super villain roadster.
Yeah.
It looks a little bit almost like some kind of crazy Munsters car, you know, like a Dragula
car.
They were
fighting the Mr. Eon and the Pterodactyls.
Yeah. it is a cool little return to Astro City. That is accompanied with the mega volume containing
the Metro Book.
The first three?
First
what 19, had been the first?
First 19 issues.
Yeah, so the first three volumes.
Yeah. And it's a really good trade. It's got some of the best Astro City stories in it. If you've never read it, it really is. It's like, I think you're going to love it if you're a superhero fan of any stripe. If you're not a superhero fan, you still might like it, I've discovered.
Right. The stories in it, because they do tend to be about, like, usually there's a bit more of a sort of a deeper kind of story he wants to tell. And, you know, I always think of the first six issues and, like, the kind of types of stories in there. There's one where a supervillain, like, no, not a supervillain, but, like, just a criminal thug, happens to see a superhero changing into in an alley, and he sees who he is.
Yeah.
And he starts to try and figure out, he's like, A, can I figure out who this dude is? He's like, I just saw his face, but that face doesn't mean anything to me. But he's like, oh, well, can I sell this information? And he starts, like, Rashomon-style sort of imagining different possible scenarios. And there's, like, one where he goes to the mob, and he's like, I know who this guy is. And they, like, torture him for the information, and he gets nothing out of it. And so he's like, this is ultimately a story where he realizes, he's like, I am better off never pursuing this.
Yeah.
Isn't the hero Jack in the Box?
It is Jack in the Box, who's a little bit Spider-Man, a little bit Daredevil, and a little bit like Creeper. Like, it pulls from multiple
stories. I love all the characters in here.
Jack in the Box is a great hero. He's also notably an African-American hero, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And yes, you know, Samaritan's story is about, like, a Superman who can never enjoy his kind of, like, flight and his life as a hero.
Because he's too busy saving everybody.
He's too busy saving everybody. And so, weirdly, you know, people sometimes talk about how Superman is not relatable. Well, there is a Superman story that is meant to actually be relatable, because at the very least, it is about being overworked.
Yeah.
And, like, anybody will actually find themselves relating to this guy who comes home and collapses into bed and does not feel like he, like, has any time to himself. And yet, the story isn't, like, mopey.
No.
Astro City doesn't really do mopey.
There's a joy to it, yeah.
Yeah, and it is, he loves, it's clear that the world building he just adores, and if you like, especially kind of classic Marvel comics and DC comics and the way those universes interact, and even, like, the MCU and stuff like that, the feeling of, like, building out from those ideas and sort of the clever twists that Busiek adds to them makes it, like, always a very satisfying read. Like, even any given single issue will have little, you'll see little mysteries there that might pay off in what, for, like, real time was, like, might have been 10 or 15 years later. Yeah. And those characters that were in the first issue of Astro City in, like, the early 90s, they are now, that it's, like, 2022, those characters aged. It essentially allows its heroes to age out, to do the thing where, like, there's multiple generations and some of them do die off. And, you know, like, but all the tropes of superheroes, whether it's like crossovers or cosmic stuff or supernatural heroes, they all kind of get lensed through this series, and it has like a really smart take always.
Yeah, it's really good.
And the second half of this trade is the sort of Batman and Robin analog.
A sort of a more, somewhat more, I don't want to say too much, but it's a somewhat... like almost a supernatural spin on that.
Yeah, I remember their names.
Crusader and Ultra Boy.
Crusader and Ultra Boy. It is a fantastic.
Yeah, or is it Confessor? Really,
it's Confessor.
Yeah.
Confessor. You're right.
Anyway,
it's fantastic stuff.
And I think all three of us would recommend picking up both the one shot and the trade if you've never.
Yeah, in general, superhero fans of all stripes should read it.
Yeah. DC has a new Batman Beyond Neo Year. This is interesting. So this is a... I guess this maybe spins off from a Batman Urban Legends story with Batman Beyond.
Oh, okay.
But the big thing is that Bruce Wayne is dead. He has been killed by this sort of artificial intelligence called New Gotham. And New Gotham is basically keeping the crime rate flat. So basically it's like it looks like crime has leveled off in Gotham City, but it is because... New Gotham is basically managing everything.
Wait, New Gotham is a person or some kind of sentient AI? Artificial intelligence. Okay, got it.
And Terry is like basically fighting it and trying to sort of remain Batman in this world where he's trying to sort of smoother all of the edges of and make it a sort of safe Gotham for everyone.
Interesting. That's been a recurring theme throughout a lot of Batman stuff lately. But this is like... Is this a... Did Batman Beyond show up in some of their future state stuff or not?
Yeah, I think maybe so.
I was just trying to figure out. It is in his future though, right?
Yes.
This is Batman Beyond times and all that stuff.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's got Barbara Gordon, who's police commissioner. There's some nice stuff with her in there. I really like this Batman. It felt like they had the voice of Terry McGinnis. And
some of those
like
other ones haven't quite managed that, so that's notable.
Yeah, this is the first Batman Beyond comic that I've enjoyed. Most of them I've not been super into, but I thought they did a good job. They had something new to say with it, and I liked that.
Previously, you were like more like Batman Be Gone.
Batman Be Gone. Spider-Punk number one comes out. This is a long overdue. This is a character who showed up in Spider-Verse.
Yeah, like probably like 8 years ago.
Yeah, and I think we all thought like that's going to be the Spider-Gwen of this whole thing. And people did love him, but he never got his due. But this is a miniseries set in the Spider-Punk universe. He has a crew that he operates out of the, what does he call it? The Spider Base. So he's got Captain Anarchy.
Right.
He's got Riri Williams is like his Iron Punk. And and then...
There's a Hulk.
And they're fighting Kraven, who's like a white supremacist Nazi type. And it's got this sort of cool indie energy to it, the vibe of it. It definitely feels like they got what I wanted out of Spider-Punk.
Yeah. You know what I want to see somewhere in there? I don't know if this might show up at some point, but there was like a little bit of ugly crossover between Nazi stuff and punk rock in like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And like a sort of a violent subsection of punk rock.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they can address that in some way.
Well, I think that's maybe what's going on. They used the Nazi punks fuck off in here.
Yeah.
He does say that at one point while he's kicking Kraven in the face.
Right. No, but it was like in punk rock's own community.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the thing. I think Kraven is a punker running a punk gang.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He is too.
Yeah.
Okay. Then yes, that is. Then that definitely feels like that's what they're dealing with. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Like he fights villains, other like musical gangs.
Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah, Kraven's running like a gang, and he's got a mohawk and a skull tattoo.
I think it's Kraven and the Hunters. I believe.
Kraven and the Hunters.
This is like the edgier Gem and the Holograms.
Yeah. This week we get the X-Men Red and Marauders.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, you want to talk about those?
I didn't get a chance to read them.
Okay.
Well, here's what I know. X-Men Red is on the Red Planet. It is not just a book that's like, they're the team code-colored red. It's on Mars.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, and it focuses on Storm.
Yeah, they took over Mars and made it their own planet.
I was reading up on it in, like, to make the sign for it, and apparently, like, the civilization there that I believe is the twins civilization that goes with Krakoa.
Yeah, Arako.
So, like, another sort of mutant enclave.
Mm-hmm.
That they are, like, you know, Abigail Brand, and I think, you know, a.k.a. head of S.W.O.R.D. usually, has her own designs on it. And then there's, like, Cable has some kind of secret plan or something going on. And it sounded like potentially interesting intrigue on the Red Planet. But cool. I didn't read it either. I just know the premise.
And Marauders is just as... More kind
Marauders.
Of
Pisces still?
Now they're heading to the space, though, because it's dealing with a lot of Shi'ar.
Is everybody going into space?
And sees a few characters that I was not expecting to see in various areas. I was like,
right.
Oh, interesting.
Without saying too much, I think there's somebody who has connections to X-Men when they've been to space before.
Yep.
And
one is a...
and I was like, that's a pretty cool visualization of this person who shall remain nameless.
Yep. and then a character who was a pretty big villain at one point.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Also, DC put out the DC of Earth Prime, number one. This is a...
Right, this is the CW verse.
So this is a six-issue miniseries. Each issue is going to focus on different characters. It starts off with Batwoman, but I know they're going to do Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, all that stuff. So that's a thing if you're digging the shows. AWA has a book called The Joneses. Nick, I know you read this one.
Yeah,
right?
I liked this one. This one sort of feels like a...
This is like the J. Michael Straczynski verse, right?
Yes. And it feels like a more kind of adult version of Incredibles. There was some event...
it's the very one that kicked it off.
There's like a virus that causes superpowers.
There was a pandemic.
Yes.
Right at the start of our actual pandemic. Mm-hmm. And am I saying J. Michael Straczynski caused the pandemic? Yes. but it like caused superpowers, but also killed a lot of people.
Killed a lot of people
in universe.
Then, yeah, superpowers. And this focuses on like a small community where...
I think it's rare that a whole family would get
it. Yeah, a whole family gets it and they're trying to stay low, but like the father is out fighting crime. The kid, one of the older kids is as well. The mother is kind of fearful for her entire family. I thought it was just really well executed, and I thought the art was nice. I mean, we've seen a lot of it before, but this was done really well. Oh, and I'm curious to see where the story goes.
Also in the indie vein, we have West of Sundown by Vault.
Yeah, that was one that I kind of liked. That's written by Tim Seeley and Aaron Campbell. I don't know who Aaron Campbell is.
I don't either.
But Tim Seeley we know from lots of different stuff. Most recently, the Money Shot series, which I think we all kind of dug.
Yeah.
And this is his own spin on a vampire story in the Old West, and it is pretty different. I actually ended up... What I read of it, I liked. We were short on time, so I didn't get to finish it. But... there is a woman who's like kind of like a beautiful aristocratic woman in the 1860s, and I think there's a Confederate soldier who's like, you know, burying people.
Yeah.
When she rises up, and she ends up taking him essentially on as like her assistant.
Yeah.
And she kind of like gets him out of the war and sort of helps to educate him. He was, you know, seems like he was a sort of a poor, relatively ignorant but decent-hearted guy.
Yep.
And she kind of seems like mostly to go after bad people, yep. You know, the exploiters of the war of that era, which was filled with it.
Yep.
She has, by the time the story kind of gets going, it's like kind of fast forward. She's like become like sort of the toast of New York opera. Mm-hmm. And but like there's a fire that seems like was set by vampire hunters that burns her house in the native soil, you know, that like she's tied to.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it like injures her badly. And I don't know. I know that I think that she and this soldier assistant of hers, they basically have to head west. And I don't know exactly what they're trying to do.
They're trying to get to Los Angeles, which I guess is our
Los
home.
Angeles.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. So like as was very important in the original Dracula novel, his native soil had to be brought with him.
Right. Yep.
So I thought that was a pretty cool premise, I liked the writing on it. It seems like, you know, some research had gone into the dialects of the time, which I liked. I did see mention of, like, he said something like, well, she's one of the most powerful vampires except for, like, the Romanian or something.
Romanian count.
And I was like,
yeah,
is that straight up Dracula?
Just straight up Dracula.
Dracula,
yep,
tip
yep,
of the hat.
Yep.
Which sets up some interesting possibilities for the future if they want. But yeah, I think it's a promising first issue. Tim Seeley hasn't done horror since, what, Revival?
Yeah, yeah.
I know he's gone back to Hack Slash off and on over the years.
Yeah, he's doing more Hack Slash again.
And he started doing his Jesus Vampire book, right?
Yeah, which is also a return for him.
That's like a comedic over-the-top thing, right?
It is, but not... I mean, in the same way that Slash has a comedic...
Yeah, he always kind of finds drama within sometimes over-the-top situations. Even Money Shot about the scientists of the future who are forced to do porn to fund their scientific endeavors.
Yep.
Yep.
Porn with aliens on other worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Has its thoughtful moments.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, West of Sundown is the book, and yeah, I kind of recommend that one.
Lego. This is kind of weird. Skybound through Image is doing Lego Ninjago Garmadon.
Which oh, is weird. That's through Image?
It's an Image book. So it's an all-ages book, which Image doesn't do a ton of. And this is about the sort of the villain of the piece, who I guess is like, he has a son, and his son is one of the heroes, and there's been alternate versions where he's a good guy, and then he like got brought back to from death as an Oni. So this is like a whole...
Ninjago has more story than most Lego things.
I was like, I'm reading this, and it's weirdly like a Lego Usagi.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a traveler, and he meets some people, and it's an interesting sort of read.
Let me ask, is there any Lego wackiness in there?
There is some Lego wackiness.
Does occasionally like some bricks accidentally get like broken apart?
No, it's not. I wouldn't say it doesn't feel like Lego.
It's not drawn to like be bricks.
No, I mean he is drawn that way, but it's not like the Lego movie where they're like they're very clearly made
lots
of Lego.
Lots of comical stuff about
them. This is almost more like a straight up like ninja adventure thing.
Okay, yeah. That's pretty cool.
The Rocketeer gets another shot with The Great Race. This is sort of a retelling of the origin, but it's got a framing sequence. It's the modern day.
I was pleased to see through it and see that his beautiful girlfriend is Betty Page still.
Yep.
Anyway,
if you want to see the Rocketeer fight Nazis.
It's also, and it did look really well drawn, too. I don't know who that artist was, but I thought the art was really good.
Yeah. Speaking of well drawn, Alice Ever After is a new series from Boom that is written and drawn by Dan Panosian along with Giorgio Spalletta. Gorgeous artwork. Really, really beautiful. And it is a... Alice from Alice in Wonderland is now a grown woman. Her father... I don't know if this is... I've never read Alice in Wonderland, so this is... Her father is like a powerful like dentist in England.
Oh, weird.
He's a well-known lord or something. And she is like messing up his family history, or she's going to cost him his social standing because she's out there like scamming for drugs with her scumbag boyfriend Morton.
That's actually all in the original stories.
Yeah. Because the drugs are the only way she can get back to Wonderland.
At least as a premise, I have to say that's solidly interesting.
It's an interesting premise, and as the art is really really nice. I like where they're. I'm not sure where they're going with it, but I like where they've done so far. So
okay.
worth a look if that.
What's the title?
Alice Ever After.
Okay.
Is what it's called. And then there's a also want to mention. Devil's Reign number 6 comes out this week. That wraps up the Marvel event. Nick and I both got a chance to read it. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Sets up a new status quo for Daredevil that's interesting that we haven't seen before. Chip Zdarsky is just killing it with this character. And I think did some really good stuff with Kingpin and Purple Man and...
Elektra.
Luke Cage, Elektra. Like, he's really doing some good stuff.
He's currently writing Elektra, Woman Without Fear.
That was just a 3-issue mini.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, is he going to be going all DC with the Batman stuff coming up, or
he's still doing Daredevil.
Daredevil's relaunching.
So he'll be writing for both companies simultaneously.
Yep.
Does that happen too often lately?
Not lately.
No, I feel like most of the time you're kind of either with one or the other, even though people do bounce around.
Because they are relaunching with number one, right?
They are.
Because it's such a new direction for...
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, definitely worth
a person who earned his new standing.
Yep.
I mean, he's been on Daredevil for how long? I mean, it's been
4 or 5 years.
Been a few years.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good. And if he's continuing, that's...
A few number ones from last week. They did a Buffy 25th anniversary, which is sort of an anthology. It's got 4 or 5 stories, different characters.
Great artwork.
And some really nice art. Yeah, if you want a sort of Buffy one-shot to scratch your Buffy itch.
Yep.
Shadow War Alpha, which is Josh Williamson writing a short... sort of Deathstroke, Batman, I feel like Robin crossover.
So from what I read, again, this is just making the sign, I haven't read it yet. Deathstroke assassinates Ra's al Ghul.
Yep.
And I don't know if that'll stick, but he does, and like Talia sends the forces of the League of Shadows, is that what they're called? League of Assassins? Yep. League of whatever? To take him down, and I assume that brings turmoil and violent chaos to Gotham City. That's a pretty solid hook. I'm potentially down with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and Williamson has been writing the Robin series, so he's definitely focusing on Damian in here. So it seems like he dragged in, I don't know if he was writing Deathstroke King. Is that also Williamson?
I think it is. I was talking with a customer earlier, and he at least suggested that was the case.
Is he like, I want to write something that goes across all 3 of my books? Which, Yeah, I've been digging his Batman, I've been digging his Robin, so worth a look. Batman Beyond the White Knight, which I think is the fourth Batman Beyond series.
I think that's right.
Sean Murphy writing and drawing. This is 10 years in the future, and there's a Batman Beyond in the world in which Bruce Wayne sort of went bad and the Joker was a hero.
You know what the worst thing about Batman Beyond is that that's not his real name. He's always just Batman.
Nope, he's
he
Batman
needs
Beyond.
To be named Batman Beyond, yep. And make it clear for me. This yep. is not since the Shazam Captain Marvel crisis of years ago.
Yeah. And then a reprint of the Ashley Wood Zombies vs. Robots.
That was like originally like 15 years ago or something,
yeah,
right?
I don't think people know about Ashley Wood stuff. He became like a toy designer, but he's got a cool sort of Sienkiewicz style art.
Yeah, it's like a sort of painted style, but very stylized and sort of, you know, a sort of a limited color palette, almost sepia colors, but it looks really cool.
Yeah. And then some stuff from this week that I was excited to read. Strange Number 2. Which I thought was really, really good. I'm really digging
into it. Man, I wanted to read that. I like that first issue.
Star Trek Discovery number 2, which focuses on Tali and Gray.
Yeah.
And his backstory. I mean, it's no Grudge solo issue.
Listen, that Grudge solo issue is actually one of the best comics I've read this year.
It was, and that's the bar for this was high. But their backstory on Tali and Gray is really good.
Oh, nice.
I actually really like this. So I think the writer is Mike Johnson. I don't know. He's written a bunch of other stuff. There's a Moon Knight this week. There is a, I feel like there's some other notable stuff.
Little Monsters number 2.
Little Monsters number 2.
That's Jeff Lemire's book, right?
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Little Vampire Children.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then,
last week also had a new issue of New Burn.
Oh, right, yeah. And then, there's a couple trades. The Moon Knight Legacy trade, which is, collects the Max Bemis, the most recent Moon Knight series. So they will have collected everything Moon Knight except for the Warren Ellis and Brian Wood stuff.
Yeah. Right. We were talking about this, and Ellis, although he is at the very least a super creeper, possibly a full-on scumbag, did not commit any crimes. I think I'd probably reprint it.
They should have. I mean, we're giving Louis C.K. Grammys now, apparently, so...
Yeah, well, I don't know if we want to continue down that road if we can help it.
I don't think we should, but yeah.
But, like, yeah, yeah, I don't
it's
know.
It's such formative stuff, especially because of Mr. Knight, and because Declan Shalvey was so heavily involved, I feel like
it's another one of these things. It's kind of like, it reminds me of when there was all this heat on the new West Side Story because the lead actor dude is a piece of shit. Yep. But I was like, man, for this whole movie, which involves so many more people than him, it's a big, vast collaborative effort.
Yep.
For this whole movie to get, like, shot down because of him, kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, people make their own call on that, and at least at the moment, that Ellis stuff is not available.
Yep. And then we got a collection of speaking of Josh Williamson, we got a first collection of Robin, the Lazarus Tournament, which I think we all really dug.
Yeah, it was like Robin on Mortal Kombat Island.
With some
cool people in there, including, who's the skeleton-themed girl? I thought she was really
she
cool.
She is Lord Deathman's Flatline. Lord Deathman, the Japanese evil Batman's.
Okay.
Sidekick.
So there was like her and what's his name, Connor Hawk,
Ravager, Deathstroke's daughter.
Yeah, it was a cool mix with their own cool set of like Mortal Kombat type rules and training and all of this. Randy, I also wanted to mention in preparation, I guess, for the upcoming sequel to Flashpoint, one of DC's best known crossovers or miniseries. They're doing these reprints, I think, that are going to reprint the miniseries from a few years ago that accompanied Flashpoint. So in this case, they did Batman Night of Vengeance. This is the alternate timeline world where, his father became Batman because Bruce was shot in the alley.
And his mother became the Joker.
His mother became the Joker. It has writing from Brian Azzarello, which means you know it's going to be, like, intense and dark and fascinating and weird, and Batman might make a stake in it. that is a thing that once happened. And really amazing art by Eduardo Risso.
Yeah.
And it's all three issues in one. So, honestly, even if you haven't read Flashpoint yet and just want to read an interesting alternate world Batman story, it's going to probably work for you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right, that does comics for us this week. We're going to come back and talk about some TV. All right, so of course we're going to talk about Moon Knight. We're going to save that for last so we can give you a big spoiler warning. But also we want to talk about Halo.
Yep.
And We Crashed and Slow Horses are on Apple Plus.
Yep.
So we're going to start off talking about Halo. We're going to dance around the second episode a little bit because Dave has not watched it yet.
Correct.
Because Dave wanted to be a hater, and then we talked him into watching it, and he's like, oh, it's actually good.
That is true. And, you know, it's interesting because I believe in many ways it's, including the visual aspect, it structurally maps onto Mandalorian, kind of helmeted, badass merc type, who, in the first half of the episode, it's largely about his, like, badassery. But, like, the nuance and sort of the empathetic side of it doesn't happen until later. And I'd only watched the first half and I was like, it's well done, but it's not for me, which is exactly what happened with Mandalorian. And then I watched the second half and I was like, oh man, that, like, that had Grogu, that had the IG-88 robot that voiced by Taika Waititi, yep, and all that stuff.
Yep.
And all of the most interesting stuff to me happens in the second half of the episode.
Now, I will say that Quan is no Baby Yoda. I mean, no.
I like her character,
yeah,
though.
She's fine.
She's a little spitfire, and she's not going to take shit, it seems
so,
like.
Have any of us played the Halo games? Nick, have you played the Halo games?
I played the original one. And okay, that was all like... Right. And I really just played the first couple episodes, drove around a Warthog, sure, grabbed one of the ghosts, flew around.
Yep. Were you playing multiplayer?
And then I played multiplayer a lot.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the bread and butter, and that's where I stayed.
I can see, you know, just having seen the iconography of a lot of that stuff show up in the first episode, even though there's not much, like, there's not much Warthog action.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what, if I had one in front of me, I'd play it.
And then there was the Marine tanks that were kind of cool, too.
Broadly speaking, we're a relatively inexperienced with the license people watching it. Nick's, yep, had a little bit. You and I, almost zero.
Yep.
Definitely zero from me. So some of the things that might plague other fans, they changed this bit of continuity or they did this or that, won't really affect us.
Yeah, and I have definitely seen a couple of people who really are upset. Some people are really upset about it.
But I've seen some people, most people I know have been like, that was pretty good. I kind of wish they hadn't changed this, but it doesn't. But it was still really good. Or some people who are like, I don't mind the changes.
Some, yeah, of the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, it's trying to get bombed.
Of course.
Yeah, we'll come around to that maybe in a minute. But I think broadly speaking, before we dive in, we can say we were all thought it was like surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Unsurprisingly.
Well,
I don't know.
I wasn't looking forward to it. I didn't expect to like it.
Well, I was going to press play. But I mean, the
I thought
trailer...
it was going to be like, even though the games I think have some decent lore to them, I thought it was going to be a little bit of a lunk-headed action sci-fi.
Yeah,
and it's instead more like The Mandalorian, which is a kind of a more compelling, interesting, somewhat more human sci-fi.
Yeah, the trailer looked good, like polished and looks fancy.
I mean, it's still action sci-fi, I should say.
The trailer looked pretty,
yeah,
but I wasn't sure there was a story there.
Right.
I'm still not 100% sure that there's that much because I feel like the artifact that's at the heart of it, the sort of vagueness of it, which maybe they get more into later, makes it almost like a magical object, and I'm like,
There is definitely some magic to it.
It's a little bit like, kind of, well, the series is what it is, which is more like Star Wars, almost like space fantasy.
Yep.
But with a military edge, for sure.
But also, Dave, I mean, that's not... The weird, like, sort of magic technology stuff is not unlike, say, Fifth Element.
Right.
So it's not... That's not a no-go.
Yeah, no, it's
me.
It's not like a non-starter. It just means that they're not going to... I was like, okay, is there going to be any ambition to this in the Star Trek sense? Are they going to want to talk about certain, you know, like, try different themes out or shake it up with an episode of the week? But, like, I'm like, no, they're going to want to, like, root it in Halo continuity and stuff with the bad guy Covenant.
Well, here's the thing, to that degree. When I played Halo, I was like, oh, I'm just going to kill these aliens because they're evil.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously playing the good guy.
Right.
But, I mean, in the show...
Yeah, let's start out with that.
The Covenant, they have a history. They have, like, a religion. They've got personalities. Yeah.
They do still show up as the heavies
in
the first...
And they do slaughter a bunch of people. So.
They do. I mean... But there's more to them than that.
Yeah.
And also,
I like
there's essentially
that aspect.
A third faction. So let's talk about, like, the opening sequence. It's a, what, kind of outer rim planet, I get the vibe.
Yeah.
And it's like, it has that colonist settlement look, you know, a little bit, a little rough hewn.
Yeah, haphazardly put together.
The showrunners definitely watch Firefly. Let's just say that.
And they're clearly, what is it? Is it the, what do they call their
the
federation?
The UNSC, which is their.
What's
United
a stand for?
Nations Space Command, maybe?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
I'm going to say that's what it is.
Their Federation people, the USNC, these people are not fond of it at all. In fact, that's who they hate the most. They want, like, independence, and they can't get it.
I was right.
Very good work, Randy. I applaud you. But yeah, they can't get it, and they're like, we hate Spartans, we hate the USNC, they could come for us anytime and try and, like, root us out of here. And instead they get attacked by aliens.
Yep.
And I was a little bit worried. I was like, it was a pretty bad situation because they get slaughtered.
Oh, yeah.
There was a survivor who was going to clearly play a role.
Yep.
And she's like a young person and her father was killed and stuff like that. And then, like, the Spartans show up and they, like, kick the ass of the aliens. There's a weird artifact at the heart of it. And at first, like the Spartans are portrayed rather coldly.
Mm-hmm.
Very cold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they show up and he's like, Master Chief is, like, calling back to the base, and he's reporting it, and he's like, no survivors. And then he sees her, and he's like, correction, one survivor, you know, human, female,
yeah,
or whatever. And then he just, like, walks off. Like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, jeez, these are a bunch of fucking assholes.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that, though.
What, with them having removed his emotions?
Yeah, essentially they are turned into sort of automatons in a lot of ways.
Is that a thing in the games?
I believe it is.
Which, like, when you're playing the game, it's like, kind of, what do you care? You're there to blow up stuff.
Yeah.
But you're Judge Dredd with there's no conscience.
It also reminded me of kind of like the Space Marines in Warhammer 40K.
Yeah.
There are a lot of stories, and this is probably telling about a sort of more modern view of the military, where although we might enjoy some military fantasy adventure, like there's lots of games and stuff based around this, we also kind of acknowledge that they've turned these people into emotionless killing machines.
Yeah.
Only, like, in the games, I think the criticism of that doesn't tend to come out. In this, it comes out immediately.
Yeah, it does.
It is like the fulcrum on which the show tilts, at least in the first episode.
Well, and also, like, we keep cutting back to the military command, where they're a little bit heartless, and they're just like, they just want to use the Spartans as tools. And then you've got
Master Chief is like their PR hero.
Yes.
Then you got the Doctor, who's played by Natasha McElhone.
Yeah. From
where do I know her from?
I originally knew her from Ronin. She was
that's a long way back.
Like the go-between.
That is a long way back.
But she's shown up in a bunch of stuff.
How is she as young as she is if she was in Ronin?
She's great here as the sort of the Doctor who basically it seems like is responsible for the Spartan program, but is also building up Cortana, which if you know the games at all or you know like Windows 11.
That's like his AI thing.
It's the AI thing. But they're definitely doing something different with it.
Yeah.
There's more of that in the second episode. Sorry.
The second episode, Dave, it really opens up in the second episode. I wish we could talk about it because,
you know, it's funny because that's how I felt about Squid Games. If you ever get around to that, Randy. Squid Games? The Squiddy Games.
The Squiddy Games.
Was that, like, first episode was pretty good, but second episode opened it up.
Yeah, there's a character who shows up in the second episode and a place that shows up that I thought was a really interesting take.
Agreed.
I thought that character, I hadn't been paying too much attention, so the actor who's playing that character, I thought he was just one of the Spartans.
Yeah.
But he's got a much bigger role. I also really loved in the first episode.
Well, Master Chief goes renegade, so let's talk about that in a minute, but
what I'm going to talk about. So Master Chief, because of Quan, who he gets this...
That's the survivor girl.
So the artifact sort of like breaks his programming a little bit so that he can actually be... He starts
like RoboCop, he experiences a memory that suddenly makes him a little bit more human.
Yeah.
Well, it sort of wakes him up out of the cloud of all the drugs and all the controlling influences.
A.K.A. time for the USNC to kill him.
Yeah, and he realizes that they announced there were no survivors, and quickly figures out, oh, they're going to kill this kid as soon as I bring her back to base.
They literally sent him a kill order.
That's right.
In his HUD.
They're
like, you have to execute her. And he was like...
And when he decides not to, they're like, oh, vent the oxygen.
Yeah.
And kill him and kill her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I'm a...
Yeah.
They weren't trying to kill him. They were just trying to put him unconscious.
Oh, that's true. He could survive it.
But it
certainly does not cast the what I assume are broadly the good guys of the games in a good light.
But that situation spoke to his ability to outthink people as well.
Yeah,
he did
not
just muscle. He was like, okay, well, we need to get into this.
You get the system and get the oxygen working.
There were a lot of pleasant surprises for me in that latter half.
I just want to commend Pablo Schreiber. This is
He's the dude playing Master Chief.
He's playing Master Chief.
Yep.
It's really just an action thing, and he's really acting well.
It's kind of like Diego Luna in The Mandalorian. Like,
yeah.
It's literally tricky...
By the way, I thought his voice was weirdly close to The Mandalorian.
Pedro Pascal.
I thought his voice was weirdly close to The Mandalorian, who also was a don't take off your helmet guy.
Yeah.
But Master Chief is like, I'm taking it off.
This is the guy who played Pornstache in Orange is the New Black.
That's right.
So
he was also in The Wire.
Does he
have a mustache as Master Chief? He has some kind of slightly weird facial hair.
No.
I feel like. Like a weird Greek beard or something.
No, he
like that.
Does not.
Does he not?
No, but he also, he like bulked up for this.
Yeah.
He went and got really bulked up for this. But when they land at the base and they're like being surrounded by the entire Marine Corps, I like that there's some interesting faction stuff going on. Like the head of the Marine Corps does not like the Doctor.
No, not at all.
And doesn't want her doing the Cortana Project. But I'm not sure if the Cortana Project is actually a noble thing or not. There's a lot of like factions.
I can't figure out if Natasha McElhone is a good person or not.
Well,
she's not.
But at the very least, she sees Master Chief, she might see him as a prize, as something
to manipulate.
But she
literally ordered the Spartans to kill the UNSC if they started...
That's what I thought was interesting. She
sets up a protective unit of sort of the best commandos, his squad.
Like two people, right?
Three.
Oh, it's three.
Yeah, he's like,
but it's three Spartans who can kill, like, hundreds of people.
They're super soldiers.
Yeah, somebody said, does that include, like, killing, you know, like... USNC forces, and she said, like, she basically she said anybody who's
like, should I fire
him?
One of the guy was like, should I fire on friendlies? And
yeah,
said,
that's
anyone who threatens
the way it's written is great, because what she says is he asks her the question, he's like, do we fire on friendlies? And she says, if they're firing him, and no, it was not.
Oh, yeah.
The other squad, he says, if they're firing a Master Chief, they're not friendlies.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was
and
like,
I thought we were about to see some shit.
I did too.
It's going to turn into the troops and just cut into
yeah.
As it happens, things don't have to play out that way.
But I like that dynamic.
It was a pretty tense sequence.
Not knowing where allegiances are.
I'm the same. I think
that leads to some cool ideas.
There's a lot more muddiness than I expected from a, like, I thought this was going to be basically bad guys.
I suspect some people who are, like, might be frustrated with it might be like, I wanted to see a sort of military campaign style military fiction and just the choices the Spartans are making as far as tactics and where they're going and who, you know, what they're, how they're going to hit the battle lines and stuff of the...
And I don't think I would have been interested in that.
What's the bad guys called?
Covenant.
The Covenant.
Yeah.
And instead, it's like immediately kind of a muddier gray thing.
And there's more in the second episode.
The good guys don't seem so good, and Master Chief is in this place that is reminiscent. He has his... Quan is his Grogu. the person who brings out the empathetic side of this kind of... Because otherwise, it's almost like, you know, like, if you were trying to evoke sympathy from, like, the... I'm going to say Clint Eastwood as the man with no name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave, I think when you see the second episode, your opinions will change somewhat. Because this is not... I didn't draw a lot of Mandalorian comparisons.
Well, opens up. I mean, you could...
Early on, it's not like I think it's going to go there. But it's the story of a guy who's basically hardened himself to the world and just follows a code... And who then breaks that code. He also doesn't, like, he wears the helmet. He sounds like
Mandalorian as a cop.
And a singular person kind of that he has to stay with and protect.
It's like,
changes his attitude.
Mandalorian's a copy of Lone Wolf and Cub. And
I don't actually necessarily mean it as a criticism. Yeah. It was just kind of a note, something I noted. Yeah.
No, it's interesting you say it because it hadn't jumped out at me. I think it's because I watched the second episode.
Yeah.
And it does change, like...
All right, I'll watch the second episode.
I feel like it's got a lot... It reminds me a bit of what Firefly did, which I think people missing Firefly would probably be surprisingly interested in Halo.
Yeah.
And also, weirdly, you remember Space Above and Beyond?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That did have some criticism of the military while it was a military sci-fi show.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was before its time.
Most shows do, because they're written by a bunch of lefty lefty communists.
So yeah. I'm going to make a very broad prediction here.
Yeah.
But if it continues to go the way it's going... And who's to say that they might drop the ball and it crash and burn?
Right.
It might be one of the better video game, like, maybe even get into
true.
The best video
right now,
game.
Right now, it is the best video game adaptation,
I think. When you think about it, TV, serial format has been better for them because it also gave us the Castlevania thing, the animated form, and then The Witcher. Which I know was also books.
Right.
But
maybe they need to stop doing movies and just do TV.
It seems like the TV guys, I mean, you might not hear, some Halo fans might be annoyed enough to not believe this, but broadly, the TV guys actually care about the games and their themes.
Yeah.
They're actually trying to broadly appeal to those gamers, even if they're also throwing some curves at them.
I also, after watching this, I was like, I want my Mass Effect show. I want it on this level.
Yeah.
Give it to Apple.
The budgets are out there,
I'm just like, man, this would be so freaking
Mass Effect
cool.
is just, like, filled with aliens. They are, like, everywhere. They're, like, crew members.
But that's pretty... I mean, so Star Trek.
Yeah, I know, so but Star like Wars. Having like a was it Krogan's? Like a Krogan would you could would you do that as a suit?
Mocap, yeah.
You know what? I'd actually do it as a maybe like as a suit with like CG movement on the face.
Krogans and then whatever Thane's alien.
Yeah. I think the tech is there now to do a Mass Effect show.
I was like, oh, that would be so cool if you could do it with this level of like care and writing.
I agree.
Just bring it on.
Let's see. The action, by the way, was also pretty good in it. I think early on I was finding it a little conventional.
Well, it's weird the Rebels are all using, like, actual machine guns and stuff. Like, they don't have blasters. It's like...
Well, that's a little reminding me of Firefly, too. Yeah.
I think it was just, like, whatever they could get was what they were able to get. Well,
But even, like, the Halo troops, the Master Chief and those guys...
Well, I mean, they have their, like, assault rifles.
But they're, like, they're not blasters. They're using bullets. It's just, like
slug throwers.
They're like the aliens' guns.
That was in the game, though.
Yeah.
And also,
I think that's because firing bullets and the sounds and stuff that they make visceral. Is more visceral than lasers.
The one moment in the first episode that I was like, oh, that's awesome, was that he ducked, Master Chief ducks under after getting shot so much by the Covenant, and you can hear the sound effect of his shields regenerated. Because that was from the video game. Yeah.
The one thing in the first episode that I thought was like, I'm like, I don't know about this. The Rebels were having trouble doing anything to the aliens, like their weapons were just not touching them at all.
Yeah.
But then when Master Chief takes the gun off the Jeep, suddenly he can hit the aliens with it. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought the guns were the problem. Do you have magic shooty skills?
Yeah, actually, he does.
Yeah, as much as Space Marines and Warhammer 40K and I guess Jedi and
because
stuff.
Because it didn't seem like the Rebels or whoever they had ever seen the Covenant before. Complete unknown.
Yeah.
So they didn't know what they were doing, and I'm sure fear kind of factored into that. Like, I can't...
But, I think that, like, our criticisms are pretty minor.
Yeah, surprisingly good. Surprisingly good.
Yeah.
I know that this is not an opinion shared by everyone. I have at least a couple friends who've gone on rants about how terrible it is, because people are wrong.
Oh my god, he took off his helmet.
I'll be honest, if they hadn't done that, I think I would have had much less interest in the show. I want a show about a character I can empathize with. I don't want a heartless show that's like just military tactics.
And I was trying to think of like the counter-argument is like, well, wouldn't you be upset if Dredd took off his helmet? I'm like...
No.
But Sylvester Stallone already did.
Dredd is actually a little bit different. It's almost like a kind of cartoonish heightened world.
Yeah.
And Halo is wanting me to buy into more serious stuff.
Yeah.
Halo is more serious than Dredd in its way. And Dredd is like kind of wildly satirical.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it would not be super weird to see him sleeping in bed with the helmet on. Dredd is darkly comic too.
Well, no, he would be sleeping in bed and his face would be bathed in shadow. Like, he couldn't actually see it.
He had the helmet on and then like a tidy whiteys that said death to crime or something.
Judge, jury, and executioner.
No perps.
No perps.
Oh man,
what else we got?
Alright, so Nick, you and I have been diving into Apple Plus's stuff of late.
Yeah, because they're kicking ass.
They're doing really good shows. Like, they had Ted Lasso, which of course is the best show on TV.
But they're kind of diversifying and kind of going in weird
ways. Yeah, they still do stuff I'm not crazy about, but like, I'm really enjoying Severance, dark as it is. But then I watched We Crashed, which is based on a podcast that Wondery did about WeWork.
Yep.
Which is funny because
I knew nothing about this.
So I knew that WeWork was a thing, because I remember I had some friends who worked in tech who, like, they had these WeWork spaces that were, like, basically communal workspaces. You would go in if you were essentially working from home, and instead you would go and work at these offices.
I apparently had my head in the sand, because I didn't know any of this.
I remember hearing, there was WeWorks in Austin, at least.
Yeah, I knew. After the fact, I saw that. So,
the thing is, like, I don't know enough about it, but I guess the company just vanished, like, they're gone now?
Well, I think during the pandemic... That is when that kind of fell apart.
Time for it.
No, not a communal workspace during the pandemic. Yeah, not so
ideal. But this whole thing is about the guy who's the Jared Leto is playing the sort of, is he Romanian? No,
I thought he was Israeli.
Yeah, he's Israeli. An Israeli like tech. He's not a genius. He just like he's a guy who like pitches tech ideas.
Honestly, he was a hustler at the beginning.
Yeah, he's
kind
a
of just like I've got these ideas, and he's like, what is it? Like knee pads for babies. Yeah. His name is Adam Newman.
Adam Newman, that's right.
And his wife Rebecca.
And so he meets Rebecca, who is a yoga instructor.
Yep. A yogi
played by
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway. And
in I mean, she's just flat out the star of the show.
She's fantastic in this, yeah. But basically, the two of them, he comes up with this idea that's like a communal workspace. It sort of started out as a communal, like, living space, and it becomes a communal workspace. and he pitches some money. He gets the money, and he's like, he's a nut.
Oh, he is. But he is like a smooth talker. He could basically talk you out of whatever.
Yeah.
It's just that level of energy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm a fan of Jared Leto. I'm a fan of his ability to act, because he's super convincing in most roles.
You remember, Dave, you remember Uncut Gems?
Yeah.
Remember how Adam, there was that
Uncut Gems.
Buzzy never-stopping energy of that character.
Oh, yeah.
And he never stops talking.
Right.
This guy is very much like that.
I feel like this is the character that Adam Sandler's character was based on.
Yeah.
Right. And I think sometimes, like, if you're like, A, piece of shit in real life,
yep.
B, play pieces of shit, like people, like, will just like write you off. And I think just from my general experience with Jared Leto, and I haven't seen him in that many things, it seems like he kind of plays himself, but he can push that to some somewhat interesting places. I haven't seen this show, so I don't know what y'all are talking about.
I would say that he disappears in roles of various creeps and jerks.
Yeah. Okay.
And he does that here. And he does.
And are you able to enjoy it?
I wasn't sure I was going to be able to, because I'm like, I don't want to watch the rich succeed and fail, like it's.
Yeah.
But it is. It definitely has that sort of like Goodfellas or something like that. The sort of like watching a thing that you know is doomed.
Yeah, yeah.
But watching them go through and like early on, like it looks like how is this ever going to get off the ground? And then when it starts taking off, you're like, well, where is it going to crash? And they're doing a really good job of the storytelling.
Yeah,
like,
they are
very compelling,
and it's going to some weird spots and some dark places and. Yeah, there were episodes that I just kind of cringed
through. Uncut Gems was like one massive cringe of a movie waiting for the collapse.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. Sometimes I do like
this guy's extending himself too far, and he clearly is like bringing in money that he's never going to be able to pay back. And then Anne Hathaway is...
It's like the fire festival.
So Anne Hathaway...
There's a festival in this that I was just like, oh my God.
Anne Hathaway's character is the cousin of Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yes.
And she wanted to be an actress, and she's clearly like not a very good one. And she also, like, so she's suffering with some self-esteem issues that she then projects when they get successful into other people.
Yep.
And, yeah, it's a fascinating watch. I found it really entertaining and watchable. I watched the first episode, and I wasn't sure I was going to keep up with it, and then I just binged the rest.
Some random performances by some cool people, like America Ferrera, and I know, like, Anthony Edwards shows up.
Oh, that's America Ferrera. She's great in this.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. Who's Anthony Edwards playing? I recognize
the
credit.
He's one of the... bank guys.
Oh, okay.
Like the guy that like super believes in him and stuff.
Okay, all right, okay. But yeah, it's really good. I'm not a biopic guy at all, but I found this very watchable.
I'm watching a lot of biopic stuff right now.
Yeah.
Biological pictures.
And then we also watched Slow Horses, which
By the way, just real quick, what was the name of the show y'all were just talking about?
We crashed.
Got it.
We watched Slow Horses, which is two episodes in.
Yes.
It is about based on a book.
It is.
So it's a lot of books being adapted to TV right now.
I mean, that's
probably
good.
Yeah, probably good. To miniseries.
But,
so the big thing about this
is... You know, where Hollywood is kind of like returning to franchises again and again and is banking on that, it seems like TV does have a little bit more of an ability to try out some different stuff, even if it's adapting something that previously exists, which gives them something of a safety net.
Yeah.
But...
So this is a spy thriller of sorts.
It is. But it focuses on a house of defunct and reject spies.
It's called Slough House.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's a real thing. It probably is.
Probably is.
So this is MI5,
uh-huh.
And it's basically being run by Gary Oldman. Is like a burnt out ex spy. He is like running it. And
wasn't Gary Oldman the star of Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy?
Yeah, this is his kind of like follow up to that. Like he wanted to do another spy show, and this is what.
But it's not. Does it vibe at all similar to that?
No.
But.
Because that was like serious spy shit.
He plays like a drunkard, basically drinking at his job at his desk every day, and
so
thumping on the ground to get people's attention.
It opens with this lead with this sort of young British agent in a. We don't know it's a training exercise, but it's a training exercise, and he's like chasing down a terrorist in the airport. They know it has a bomb, and we watch as the guy feeding him intel gives him the wrong information.
Yeah.
And then he chases the wrong guy down, and when they catch the wrong guy, the intel guy is like, no, I said this, and basically puts it all off on this field agent.
Oh. Yeah.
And then this field agent goes rogue and runs and chases the other guy, and the guy basically blows up a train and kills a bunch of people, which again, training exercise, but you don't know that.
Right.
Right.
And then that is how he has wound up at Slough House. He basically is responsible for, they're like, yeah, it was a training exercise, but if it wasn't, you would have gotten like 400 people killed.
Yeah. This so sounds like not, sort of. Is it, but this is like heightened spy stuff.
It is, but it's not like it's
not James Bond.
Not James Bond. No. Well, it's also. It is about spycraft. Like Nick said, it's like kind of like Ruckus stuff. I feel like it's kind of like Warren Ellis' stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Which is only like, was sort of like realism, but like turned up a little bit.
It's got a little bit of dark humor to it.
It's also got a little bit of a workplace comedy edge to it.
It's got really good characters. Like, yeah, there's a weird character who's like a Scottish guy who keeps trying to get the other two agents to go out to the pub with him, and they keep begging off.
I feel like he's like desperate for company.
And there's a they won't they going on with the main guy and another spy who she is clearly much more talented at this.
Yeah.
And she's not sure, then we're not sure why she's here.
She, Olivia Cook, she's from Ready Player One and few other.
She's really good here.
She is.
The relationship of those two is interesting, and.
Scott Thomas plays the head of. Or second in command of
section,
MI5?
Section chief or something like that.
She's great. I haven't seen her in forever, and she is phenomenal.
But the central story here is that a Muslim student gets grabbed off the street by the Sons of Albion, a sort of white nationalist group. Uh-huh. And they are threatening to cut his head off, and so they're trying to find him. And Slough House has a lead on this that nobody else is following up on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's the central story. The cliffhanger for the second episode.
I was like, holy shit!
I was like looking for that third episode, and it doesn't come until Friday because it's a great one.
It is.
It's just a limited series. I don't know how long. I think it's like six episodes.
I think it's six episodes. But I know there are more books in the, that he's done. So,
but it's really good. It's I really liked this. All right. Let's give a spoiler break for Moon Knight. If you have not watched Moon Knight yet, you probably wouldn't want to listen to this last bit. And we'll sign off. But otherwise, we're going to do a spoiler. And then we're going to talk about the first episode of Moon Knight, which we've all seen.
But first, let's put our shoes on full of glass.
Yes. I don't know this. I know Moon Knight a little bit. I'm actually a fan of the character. I've read all the originals. I've read most of the relaunches. I don't remember this character. I know he's in the book somewhere.
Yeah.
You're talking about the dude who plays
Ethan Hawke's
character, Arthur Harrow.
Yeah, he's kind of a cult leader type.
Yeah. But, like, I don't know if he's from the comics or if they did a complete reinvention, but this idea of, like, He's got an Egyptian goddess talking in his head.
Yeah.
And his weird, like, my goddess would have prevented Pol Pot and Hitler, and, like, she judges people based on things they haven't even done.
Yeah.
It is a interesting counterpoint to Khonshu's, like, Fish to Vengeance thing.
Yeah. But let's, before we zero in on anything, broadly, did y'all like it?
I did. I was worried about this one.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a little sad because this
It looks even less like... I think if somebody were to watch this, Randy, and they were to find out that this character was broadly conceived as Marvel's answer to Batman, they'd be like, really? He doesn't seem like...
Is he Marvel's answer to Batman? People say that. Is that actually true?
I don't know, like, the behind-the-scenes thing, but he was a millionaire, essentially a millionaire playboy, or at least one of his identities, who had, you know, like, went out, just fought sort of physical, normal stuff. He had little darts he threw at people. He had a butler.
I think early on
in other words, but basically his basis in the old days at Marvel, like there was a very Batman vibe to him.
Yeah, I guess I'm not
dissing it because there was also differences.
I feel like the Marvel's Batman is a shorthand for people who've never read the character. I just want to be clear about that's wrong.
You know, I read some early Moon Knight stuff as a kid, and like it vibed Batman-ish.
When I read the Moon Knight stuff, the vibe I always got of it was a sort of pulp hero. He's got these identities on the street, very very Shadow-esque. He's a former mercenary. He's got this beautiful girl who's his wife who doesn't necessarily approve of his costume. He's got a pilot who's like his buddy. He flies around a moon cop. Like, I felt like this...
That's just Alfred in a helicopter.
I don't think that's true. I get where you map it on.
Anyway, but my point in mentioning is not to say that that is a definite fact. I mention it more as like a trope, even if it is just the idea that people have.
Yeah.
This show doesn't... You would never even guess that this character had any... that anybody would ever have said this had anything to do with Batman.
True. But that's why I wanted... Before I talk about the show itself and how I liked it... The disappointment I have...
You wanted the more Batman ripoff one.
I don't want the Batman ripoff. I wanted to be a pulp show.
Yeah.
I wanted the pulp, the comics, which are weird and horror-y and a little bit, and, you know, they're supernatural stuff.
He actually began out of a comic that was a Marvel's werewolf comic of the 70s.
So I wanted the, like, slightly darker, streetwise kind of... I want Jake Lockley in the cab and that kind of stuff, and I wanted all of that kind of stuff, and I wanted Frenchie in the helicopter and all that kind of stuff. I was hoping for that Moon Knight, and I think unless this thing goes in a very weird direction, we're not going to get that Moon Knight.
Well, they are doing, I can almost guarantee you're not.
They're doing something much closer to what... If I was pointing anyone to the comics, I'd point them to Jeff Lemire stuff, yeah, where he very much dove into the multiple personality and the gods of Egypt and that kind of stuff. And here's the thing. I don't mind that, but I definitely feel a little sad at not getting the version I wanted.
I think because I've seen so many movies that are essentially based on sort of pulp conventions, I feel like it's broadly tropes I've seen enough of before. So I think I was more excited to see something that surprised me than I was disappointed in any way that it was a kind of a pretty big change up from the comics.
So you liked it?
Yeah.
I also liked it quite a bit. Yeah, I was surprised how much I
was
liked
surprised.
It.
I was kind of like... I was going to watch it. It was an MCU thing, anyways. Yeah.
And I think all of us were worried, by the way, from the trailer at
the
his
weird voice.
Stammering English Oscar Isaac.
By the way, does it feel to you like in the trailer they accentuated that voice? Because he's just doing sort of a weird Cockney guy. Like, it's not that crazy.
But it's the version of the voice he thinks somebody who lives in England should have.
Yeah.
And I liked that because it's just a made-up thing.
It's a made-up thing, yeah. He's not British.
He's not British at all.
Right, yeah.
Like, what's that voice you're doing?
I think it was just disconcerting, most disconcerting on the ads, because the character is a little bit larger than life, kind of like the nebbish dude.
Yeah.
And because we weren't expecting it. Yeah. I think that's why it felt that way, but I don't think they actually changed anything, for instance, between the trailers and the show.
I do like how they did, like, the violence.
Well, let's come back to that in just a second. So just real quick, like, plot-wise... this is a guy who has blackouts. Does he know he has?
Well,
and he works at a.
He thinks he sleepwalks.
Because he has a he has a sleepwalk thing set up. He's got tape on his door,
right?
Sand, so we can see his footprints.
He works at the gift shop at a museum,
the British Museum.
At the British Museum, is kind of put upon by his coworkers.
Yep.
He likes goldfish.
He forgets things like that. He has a date with one of his coworkers.
So, can I ask a question about the goldfish?
Yeah.
You remember A Fish Called Wanda?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some kind of code where, like, being a British dude with a goldfish, is it code somehow for being, like foppish or, like...
A sad
weak?
Man?
Like, is it the British man equivalent of the crazy cat lady? Like, I mean, yes, I'd only have two nickels, but it's weird that it happened twice.
I think this may be a you thing, right?
Okay, I'm just saying, like I say... It's one of those things, like, if I had a nickel for every time I've seen a foppish British man who had a gold weird attached to his goldfish, I'd have two nickels.
You'd be
but
over.
It's weird that it happened twice.
You'd
Oscar
be overplaying a.
Yeah.
You'd be overplaying a claw machine at CC's Pizza. No, but yeah, like, you know, it is definitely broadly a shorthand for this is a kind of a lonely weird dude.
Yeah.
I think it's like it's like having a like being a person with like a cat, except it's weirder. And so it's like it means you're more.
Yeah, people having cats are weird.
Whose machine do you think he's leaving all those messages for his mom?
Oh yeah, he's dead. His mom doesn't exist.
No, his mom doesn't exist. By who is he talking
for
to?
For sure, I don't know who he's leaving those messages for.
but yes, this is a guy who's got some issues just in and of itself. When suddenly he kind of begins running afoul of a sort of a cult leader. People are chasing him. I forget what kicks
it off.
It
seems like a dream sequence.
Yeah,
like,
he literally just shows up in the town.
He goes to sleep and he wakes up in this weird, like, German town or something.
I immediately was like, is this Latveria? Because it was very kind of strange.
And there's, like, mercenaries everywhere and he's, like, dodging it. And then he winds up in the middle of this cult thing. And then everybody else knows to bend down and he doesn't. And, like, he's got this thing.
He watches this guy kill a woman.
Man who has a tattoo of a scale on it that where they do the sort of judging your soul like in the sort of tradition of like Egyptian ancient Egypt.
But I also they did some funny thing where he's trying to give the thing whatever a scarab.
It's a scarab.
Yeah, he's trying to give the scarab to him, and his body keeps reminding me of the Spider-Man No Way Home, where his spider sense is like keeping it away from Doctor Strange.
Well, what's his name? F. Murray Abraham doing the voice
of Khonshu.
Khonshu is like this you know
he calls him an idiot.
Yeah, like it's like if you were. Yeah, it's like a angry god annoyed that somehow, you know, his avatar or whatever has ended up in this, like, sort of little lame-o dude.
Completely useless, yeah.
Yeah. And so now let's get to the blackouts.
Yeah.
I found that this was actually, although some people have not liked it.
I loved this.
It was my favorite aspect of the kind of what they brought to the show, which is they have this sort of flickering effect where he goes to black. And then he wakes up and, like, first time you see it, it's like a bunch of dudes around him that were attacking him are just all laid out, bloodily
beaten.
It's
like 8 or 10 of them.
Yeah, and he's got, like, blood on his knuckles, I think.
Yeah, they were just beaten. I thought they were dead. I thought, like, everyone died.
I don't know, but he's definitely
those people in the cars, those died.
The car chase was the best scene.
Yeah, so he steals an ice cream truck.
Yes.
And is, like, kind of being, like, chased through the mountains. And if this sounds slightly comical, there is a darkly comic element to it.
But, like, he passes out driving the car, and he wakes up, and he's got a gun in his hand, and there's a dead guy. And
there's, like, the effect of something he had done happens. Like, a car, like, goes flying over
explodes.
And explodes and, like, crashes, killing all these people. Yep.
I also love when he blacks out again, he wakes up, and the ice cream truck is going backwards, and he's still firing through the windshield.
Yes.
And it's, like... It'd
be like, imagine if you blacked out and then, like suddenly went all, like, what would have been, like, old school, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger or Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And then, like, suddenly woke up and you were just your normal self, but you were still doing the things they were doing.
But in the traditional Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis, we see all the action.
Here, we just see the effects.
We just see the effects. And I thought that was brilliant.
It was.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Some people are disappointed. They wanted to see Moon Knight do ninja stuff.
And we do see Moon Knight do ninja stuff.
I'm not sure how much that is going to... Whether this is going to continue throughout the show or whether we will see Moon Knight do more ninja stuff.
I do think if this was the ongoing for the entire 6 episodes, I'm going to be upset with it. I am... One of the minor gripes I have with the show, I thought was really good... is I would really like some Moon Knight in my Moon Knight, and they waited until the very last minute to give me Moon Knight in the costume.
Yeah.
I was so interested in what was going on, though, that I didn't really think about that.
I guess the thing is, it gives me Daredevil vibes, where as much as I like the Netflix Daredevil, it took them 10 episodes to put him in the damn costume.
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't be embarrassed. Being embarrassed about the costume is
here. We got him in the first.
Yeah, we got him in the first.
Yeah, don't be a big baby, Randy.
I'm just saying, it worries me.
I also liked that last scene quite a bit with him having a conversation with himself in the mirror.
Yeah.
I think that can sometimes be a little silly.
Yeah,
but this one was, like, really well shot and lit and... Oscar Isaac
was he
is
conversing with himself while there was this thing hammering
this
at the door?
Dog thing.
It was like a hyena demon, or probably a jackal because it's Egyptian.
You know what I loved about the jackal? This is one of the reasons like the holding off on Moon Knight worked. Is this jackal thing is just terrifying, chasing him. It's like a horror movie.
Yeah,
he chased the thing, and then when Moon Knight takes over, we see the jackal trying to escape, and Moon Knight drags it back in to beat it. I'm like, oh, okay, he's that guy.
Well, you know, Warren Ellis famously kind of. Did his like mission statement for why he wears this silver white kind of costume is he wants the bad guys to see him coming. That's how over the top and outrageous he is. He doesn't care if you see him.
Yeah.
And this had that vibe as this thing that, yes, as you say, is actually like seemed very scary. And then suddenly it's trying to get away from him.
Yeah.
So I've seen this pointed out by a few people and the fact that much of this episode is what we saw in the trailers.
Yeah,
we know nothing after that.
Yeah,
for the next 5 episodes.
That's, by the way, I did see Deschamps is in his phone.
Is in his phone.
Frenchie. That may be all we get, but he's referenced.
I hope he shows up at some point.
But the woman he's talking to isn't Marlene; it's somebody else.
Yeah, it was somebody else.
It's all, by the way, we should say very trippy show.
It is,
like, especially if you're watching this having no basis for like what's going on. You may be like, this is the weirdest show Marvel has ever done.
But it's like,
that wasn't Legion.
Is it weirder than Scarlet Witch? And WandaVision was weird to start with.
I think, you know, if you had seen that character in the movies, you would at least kind of have a grounding and know that, oh, something weird is going on with her. But, like, most people don't even know who Mark Spector is.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I know this has somebody from the Loki show involved. I can't remember if it was the writer or...
I'm not against it. But it is a little weird to me because Moon Knight is, in the comics, is just a guy who put on a costume.
Yeah.
And in this, he's got like a Spawn Venom-style costume that wraps around him. And I don't dislike it, but it definitely is a change.
Is that really happening, or is that happening in his mind?
I don't know.
I think that's something that's
probably...
You tell me Stephen Grant had a costume on underneath all that?
I'm saying, like, have we definitely seen that other people have seen it? Is it possible
true,
that it's only how he envisions himself?
Yeah,
you think
that's
true. Jackal wasn't there?
No.
Jackal could be there.
If no one was actually seeing Moon Knight doing the beating. Yeah, if that's just in his head, yeah.
Yeah, that's just Mark Spector going crazy. I suspect it is some sort of weird, organic, godly costume
thing.
Which
I'm not against. It's fine.
But Yeah, the rest of that I'll just sort of have to see how it plays out.
I was skeptical about the costume, but I've seen it in toy form.
Yeah.
And it looks freaking cool. Both the Mr. Knight and the...
I was very skeptical about this whole thing. I was getting very nervous vibes. I was a little worried.
You're worried Oscar Isaac had gone...
I was worried he'd gone rogue.
Gone rogue on you, yeah.
But I think he did go a little rogue.
But it worked. Like, this first episode is really good. And I can't wait to see.
I think both he and Ethan Hawke went a little rogue.
Yeah,
I think that
Ethan Hawke is great in this.
I mean,
he's a pretty memorable villain.
Fill in the blank with whatever. Ethan Hawke is great because he's just that.
He is always good.
Yeah.
His villain is something we haven't seen in the MCU.
Yeah.
And
like I said, I think the bit where he corners Steven in his own museum, and Steven calls out to this guy that he clearly knows, the security guard, and the guy's like, yeah, I'm with this guy.
Yeah, they're all part of his
and he's
cult.
Surrounded by this cult, and there's a cop who is in it. Like, it's the far-reachingness of this cult is interesting.
Yeah.
I can't wait for tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watch the next episode. All right, I think that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week. Well, or in 2 weeks. Hopefully next week.
We're going to try for next week.
No, we'll see.
Until next time. Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.